Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, it's Vlad Harrison in our Panther Rants podcast. It's a beautiful Monday. Well, it depends on where you live, but back to another week of work. We got Super Bowl coming up. We just had the NHL All-Star Game over the weekend. And the Pro Bowl. So those were two big events that happened over the weekend. You know, as far as All-Star games go, I mean, the Pro Bowl is pretty much nothing these days. And really, it was really never a huge thing. Because at one time, there was always a big thing between the AFC and NFC as far as superiority went. Because at one time, the AFC went, like, I think over a decade without a Super Bowl win. I think the last win they had was, I believe, it was the Raiders, actually. It was the Raiders win over the Redskins. It was the last Super Bowl win. And nobody in their right mind could, for some reason, the AFC could win a Super Bowl ever since then. The streak went on from, I believe, from then on to, I believe, 97. When the Broncos won it. 97-90 when the Broncos won it. But for a while, I mean, the NFC was pretty much, you know, the marquee conference out of the two. And the thing about it was, you know, AFC just didn't have much to challenge out. I mean, you had the, well, in the late, mid to late 80s, early 90s, you had the Broncos. Elway went several times with that team, and they just, you know, couldn't get it done. You know, the last two times in the 80s, all three times they went. You figure the Giants, they lost by 19. I mean, they had control of that game, and they fell apart. The Redskins, they had control as well in the very early in the game. But the Redskins just punched them in the mouth several times, and by halftime, the game was over. And then the 49ers game, which they had no chance of winning that game at all because they weren't, one, the Broncos just weren't that good. And two, the San Francisco 49ers were really, really good. And they just beat the crap out of them. I mean, the game wasn't even close. 55-10 was the final score of that game. And we didn't see the Broncos back until, you know, the 97 season. And they actually, where they beat Green Bay. And then they beat Atlanta, and then LA retired. Although, I think if LA would have stayed on, I think he could have played more, I thought. If that team would have stayed together, I think they could have won two more Super Bowls. Or at least one more. But Terrell Davis started to get hurt. And they really didn't have a Super Bowl replacement for Elway at the quarterback position. You know, I think they had Brian Greasy at that time, and that was it. There was Bubby as well, but, you know, Bubby was on that team, and he knew the offense. And people thought maybe give him a shot, and I think that season after Elway retired, Bubby had the opportunity. He stunk up the joint in the preseason. That was it for him. But looking for that, some other teams, he had the Bills. And the Bills should have ended the drought in 90. They had the team to do it. They were really good. It just, Scott Norwood just missed some kicks. And Belichick obviously was the offensive coordinator defensive coordinator against for the Giants against the Bills. And basically, he knew how to play them. You know, and it worked to their degree. And of course, they had a backup quarterback in Hostetler in that game, and they played out of their minds that game. I mean, they had, you know, it wasn't like they were no slouches. I mean, they had some good players as well. They had they had Otis Anderson. He was towards the end of his career, but he was still good. Or as he's called, OJ Anderson. They had David Maggot, who was a small running back, but he was quick and shifty. He could not only run out of the backfield, but he could catch passes. He returned punts, returned kicks. You know, he was the jack of all trades for them. You had Mark Ingram. So they were no slouches, and I think Mark Bavaro was still on that team as well. And he, you know, there's also Stephen Baker, and Baker obviously wasn't no Jerry Rice, but he was, you know, a pretty quick receiver. But then, you know, the Bills, they had, you know, the Redskins the next year, and the Skins were, that was a really good team as well. I mean, they were undefeated for most of the year, and they ended up finishing 14-2. Then, you know, after that, they had the Cowboys for next two seasons. And Cowboys walloped them the first time. The second time, the Bills had a 13-6 lead at halftime, and they just fell apart in the second half. And that was pretty much it for the Buffalo Bills. You know, we didn't see much of them after that. And I remember it was the 95 season where that was the year the Steelers went to the Super Bowl. And I think they did face the Bills and beat the crap out of them. And I think the Bills had Alex Van Pelt as their quarterback at the time, because Kelly was hurt. And I remember the next year the Bills tried to make a run. And I think Kelly got hurt in the playoff games against Jacksonville. And I remember they showed Kelly being carted off the field. And pretty much they said this was pretty much the end of the Bills dynasty. And it really was, because the team got dismantled after that. A lot of those guys went elsewhere. I think Andre Reed stuck around, but you know, Thurman Thomas was pretty much gone after that. But that was an awesome era. But yeah, that's, you know, pretty much, you know, for the AFC late '80s, you had the Browns. The Browns were one of the best teams in the AFC, so it pretty much tells you how really good the AFC really was at that time. I mean, the Browns had a nice roster. It just, well, they just couldn't win games, or win the ones they wanted to. And, you know, yeah, they had Marty Ball to deal with. But other than that, I mean, that's, the Pro Bowl really wasn't much after that. It hasn't been for like decades. You know. I mean, one time it was a league bragging rights, and it really was no big deal. The NHL All-Star Game, for me, you know, growing up, I mean, the All-Star Game was a huge deal. And the reason why is, you know, when I grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, it was about bragging rights, not so much for your the conference you played in, but it was bragging rights for yourself. You know, so if you had a really good game in the All-Star Game, it was a huge deal. It was, you know, it was basically making a name for yourself amongst all those players, and that's how the NBA All-Star Game was as well. You had all those stars, and it was all about being that guy. Out of all those all-stars, it was to be the man, pretty much. And I remember when the All-Star Gamer Lemieux scored 4 goals, and it was at the Civic Arena, or as people would call it, the Mellon Arena. I grew up calling it the Civic Arena, so that's why I call it. He scored four goals in that game. I mean, they you know, the Wales Conference won it. But, I mean, he at the time, it was a... you still had the Lemieux and Gretzky rivalry. And for him to knock those four goals, it was a huge-ass deal. And I believe that year he had the point streak going as well. And he, you know, he was trying to break Gretzky's point streak record. And he did very well, but at the end of the day, his back started to bother him. And pretty much, I believe, if I remember correctly, I think he shut it down that year. You know, that's the thing about Mario is he was a hell of a player, but the guy had so many injury problems. I mean, for him to play through all that was amazing. And I think what really helped them out was getting Jágr and a bunch of other guys on that roster, because it took a lot off of him and it helped him play longer. Because I don't think if he doesn't have Jágr, Ron Francis, and of course, you know, Kevin Stevens developing, he doesn't have all for, you know, Larry Murphy, all those guys, all that talent around him, I don't think he plays for longer than what he did. You know, I don't think his body would have been able to take it. You know, getting those guys really, really helped him a lot. But yeah, I remember he was gone from that. But that was, you know, I remember for me the big thing with hockey at that time was the skills competition. And we loved it. I mean, it was so awesome to watch the skills competition. You had the skating thing where I think Brian Leach just always win it. Or no, it was either Leach or Gardner. Mike Gardner, I think, was the guy who would win the skating competition. You had him, and then the slap shot competition, which you had like Eli Afraidy. Eli Afraidy would always win it, I think. I think he may have won it once or twice, but he was always like the favorite now because he would blast the shit out of that puck. I think there was him, there was a bunch of other players who could really kill that puck. Al McGinnis was another guy on those defensemen. I mean, he was one of those defensemen who could slap the shit out of that puck. NBA, you had the slam dunk competition. And at one time in the 80s, that was a big bragging rights as well to win that. Because you had all the stars performed it. You had Jordan, Wilkins. Those were always your top two guys. There was the big rivalry as far as the dunk competition was concerned. Spud Webb was another one. Those two were all, you know, at the time, the slam dunk competition, that was big bragging rights as well to win that. Same with the three-point competition. You had Bird and all those other guys. You know, and now, you know, you don't see those guys participating as much. I mean, the stars, at least. I don't think LeBron's ever participated in the dunk competition, but I could be wrong. And really, you know, the NBA All-Star game now is just a wide-open offensive game. And, you know, it's not much defensive at all. It's just a lot of scoring. There's really nothing to brag about. Whereas back at the time, those guys would show up big in those games. Make a name for themselves. Same with the NHL as well. And at one time, you know, for the baseball All-Star game, it was the same thing as well. It was a serious competition, and you know, it was all about the pride of the league you played in. NHL, you know, it's still a fun game to watch. I mean, Crosby won the MVP, and it was his first All-Star MVP, which surprised the hell out of me because I thought he won more than I thought he at least had the one All-Star MVP, but he didn't. So, that surprised the hell out of me. I don't really watch hockey as much as I used to because I don't live in a hockey town. I mean, the only source of hockey I get is on Twitter, pretty much, from all the Pens fans that, you know, at BMO and everything. I mean, as long as I've known, you know, Penguins hockey, the goaltender always gets the brunt of the blame for everything. We've always blamed the goaltender for everything. We bitched about Barrasso. Reagan would replace him, and we would love Reagan. Then we'd bitch about Reagan. Then we'd find somebody else to bitch about, you know, whether it's J.S. Albin or... Good Lord, what were some other, you know, surprisingly good goal? There's Patrick Laleem. You know, I remember in 1970, he had that... 96, 97, he had that big unbeaten streak. He had that going for him. I think we dealt him off eventually. But yeah, we've always been hard on our goaltenders. Even ones that won us cups. You know, so I mean, the last Penguin game I went to was probably, I would say 2013. I went to a game and Pens won, I think. They beat the Devils 6-1 or something like that. Yeah, it was like that. It was that. I mean, for one thing, it surprised the hell out of me they beat the Devils that bad, because I think Brodeur was a net. I think he was towards the end of his career. But I think the Pens only left one goal, and they were still bitching about Fleury for some reason. I have no idea why. Never understood it, and up until we left, I never understood it either. I mean, suppose he wasn't the same guy as he was, and, you know, goalies do age, and with Matt Murray, he just got hot, and, you know, when you have a salary cap, you got to make choices, and the Pens, they went with the younger goaltender with a hot hand at that point. But, you know, the Pens have, you know, they've done pretty well in this, you know, since 2000. I mean, they should win more cups under Lemieux, I felt, but once they got Crosby, and they probably could have won more cups under with Crosby, but they've won three now, and that's a lot. I mean, going back to back was hard enough. I mean, that's just a hard thing to do. I mean, the Bulls won three-peated the 1 year, and I thought the Pens could have three-peated, but the Islanders had something to say about that. And of course, the NHL started allowing obstruction and all the other crap, and which nearly murdered the league. And it's pretty, you know, I mean, how bad was the whole NHL, you know, dead puck era? Well, basically to a point where they had a strike, and then ESPN decided they'd rather play the World Series of Poker than play hockey games on their networks. So there you go. Although now, if you get ESPN Plus, you can get the NHL games, which I may. If I go more streaming next year, I'm thinking about doing that, because I really would love to watch some more Penguins games and get more engaged with my Twitter followers. Because I need to learn all the cheers and all the other stuff so I can be like the coolest, most knowledgeable fan in the face of the planet. You know, I have to do all that. Then maybe I can watch some Pirate games. Nah, I don't really watch baseball that much. I'll follow the Astros here and there because I have to. Because people ask me questions about the Astros and what my thoughts are, and I usually have to make shit up. But anyways, enough rambling about All-Star games. Jesus, I rambled about All-Star games for about 20 minutes, and I have a 45-minute podcast. All right, now, let's get to some other stuff here. Let's see, Pitt, over the weekend, played Louisville, and they struggled shooting all game, and they led at halftime, and then eventually Louisville tightened up, and they fell apart, you know, Pitt fell apart. As Capel said, January is always a tough month, and so is February. I mean, college basketball, these are two of the toughest months of the year. It's always a grind, and we used to always bitch and moan when, you know, teams under Jamie would start struggling around this time, because, you know, they would do so good, and up until December, then when league would play would start, we would win some games, and then we would struggle a bunch. But then eventually the team would wake up, and they would win a whole bunch. Or they would go to the Big East tournament and, you know, go to the finals. But, yeah, I mean, this is the big grind, and, I mean, you just have to see how the players react to it. I mean, yeah, they're not doing dick in the ACC play since they beat Florida State. But one thing you say about this team is you can't cut the money out of every game like you did with last year's team, when pretty much you knew. Pretty much last year it was the debate of how many points we were going to lose by. Were we going to lose by 20 points, 30 points, 50 points, 10 points? Yeah, that was always a big debate. Whereas now, not so much. You can't count this team out of games anymore. They're going to win some more ACC games. Like I said, don't expect anything in terms of postseason, not even any type of invitational. Just enjoy the ride. And of course, some people say, well, that's true, but nobody expects us to be in this conversation. And yeah, I mean, point taken, but still. You know how people are when they get the bracketology stuff comes out. Oh man, we're the first four out. Man, yeah. And you got people who are realistic and know there's no any chance we're gonna make the tournament or anything. But you got those ones that say, you know, that have these high hopes, and then when they get crushed, they go, oh, same old pit. You know, we were predicted to be the first four out. You know, back in December, we were projected to be in a tournament at 12-5 at one point. And, you know, we let it slip away. And, you know, same old pit. We're not going to win any more games. This program's trash. Capel's not going to get it done. So, yeah. I'm just pretty much putting a disclaimer out in case we get those type of things happening to us. And, you know, Pitt football obviously landed a commitment from a Michigan transfer. His name escapes me at this point, and I'm not really going to look him up because I'm driving right now, and I'm in traffic, so it just wouldn't be a really good look for me. But basically, he's a grad transfer, and he's supposedly really good, and he was a UConn commit, as Harry Passero says on his Twitter feed. It's amazing how I don't know his name, but I remember some shit Harry Perry tweets. So Harry, you know, so basically he was a UConn commit, and Pitt jumped on him, and a bunch of other offers came his way, and of course Michigan, he got the Michigan offer, and I'm gonna go play in the Big Ten now, so that's where he's going. Also, Lamont Way has decided to stay at Penn State, which I think makes a lot of sense, because I really couldn't see him going anywhere else. I think for him, he was slated to start at his position, but I think for some reason he may have been disgruntled, and I don't know why. You know, maybe he wanted a pay raise. I don't know. Maybe he, you know, you never know with paying college athletes. I mean, maybe, you know, he fell for his new, for, you know, for his new position where he could be the star. He needed starter money. I mean, can't blame him if that was the case. He's getting into rapping now. Maybe he needed money to make his mixtape. You know, I mean, the guy needs studio time. I mean, you got to have studio time, and maybe Penn State's going to help him with that. You know, give him some time in the studio, and so he can be creative. I mean, if they're doing that, I mean, hey, it's not like they're giving the guy hookers and drugs. I mean, they're just, you know, they're trying to further his development along as, you know, not so much as a football player, but as a human being. So, I mean, if they're paying for all that, I mean, hey, get your coin. But, you know, speaking of that, the paying college athletes, obviously, it's a big issue going on right now with college athletics, with paying athletes, and people need to realize the money's just not freaking there to pay them. I mean, I know they pull in millions of dollars, but you got to realize that money is, they're pulling all that in to fund all their sports and everything else. That's why, you know, Joe Paterno needed those 8 home games a year. I mean, sure, he had four other games he could have done with Pitt, but he needed as many as he could. I mean, that's just how the programs work. And it's because Penn State has a lot more sports to fund, and that's just how it goes. And UConn, obviously, is in a $40 million hole, and I mean, of course, they had to pay for all those buyouts and probably all that that legal case with Kevin Ollie, but which you're probably going to win, by the way, because Kevin did some pretty dumb things, supposedly. And obviously, he was oblivious to it, and he's probably going to lose that case. But, yeah, I mean, there's very few athletic departments that turn profits. And one thing you can do for the players is you can give them the ability to market themselves, which is what the NCAA doesn't like. If these players want to sell their autographs and sell their merchandise and memorabilia, let them do it. Give them the ability to market themselves. Because what I'm seeing now is I'm seeing a lot of these outside people preying on these athletes now. And they're, you know, one for instance is I saw a flyer. It looks like there's a basketball league starting up. It's not really amateur. It's supposedly supposed to pay high school players that are going to college instead of, you know, going the route of the NCAA. They get to play, you know, I guess league basketball, but they get paid and then. Until they go to the, you know, they're eligible for the NBA. And supposedly, they can make between $50,000 and $150,000 a year depending on their market value. And at the same time, they get a college scholarship. And I'm like, so I go and I look at the website. David West is the, supposedly the president of the company. He's an NBA player. Former NBA player, I believe. And I'm sitting there reading it, and I'm like, okay, this league isn't even in existence yet. And for some reason, they can pay high school players that don't want to go to college, or they want to go to college and get paid $150,000 a year. And on top of that, have a college scholarship. And I'm thinking to myself, well, how are they going to get the money to pay the players? And secondly, how are the players going to get a goddamn scholarship from the university they're playing for and get paid on top of it? It makes no, absolutely no freaking sense whatsoever. And supposedly the games are, the league is a summer league, basically, where they get to play in the summer. Here's the thing, if the NCAA knows that they're freaking playing a paid league, they're going to get freaking, they're going to get, what's it called, their scholarship stripped from them, and they're not going to be able to play NCAA, you know, college basketball ever again. So I don't, and here's the thing, not all these players are going to get $50,000 a year to play, because you got to be good, you got to have some sort of talent to do it, and there's not enough players to do that, or willing to do that. So this league benefits no one, but this is what we're seeing now. With this whole, you know, amateurism is a scam thing, is you got all these other people that are jumping in wanting to scam the athletes on top of it. The best bet is for the NBA and the NCAA to work out some things, I'm sure, and suppose they're doing that now, I guess, where they're giving these athletes a paid league, where if they don't want to go to college, they can go in this league instead, which would make a lot more sense. Where they can make their coin until they're eligible to play in the NBA. And I'm sure the NFL will see that eventually. Although the league's a little different. It's a, you know, you got to develop in this league and get bigger. But anyways, I went from Pitt to amateurism. and a long way to the amateurism. But as far as Le Mans Way goes, I couldn't see him going anywhere else. I mean, he does have a child, and staying in PA probably makes a lot of sense for him. And I can't see him going anywhere else that's nearby. Maybe West Virginia, and supposedly that was an option for him. And they had a coaching change, and that's probably not going to happen. There's no way he goes to Pitt. Although I would take him, but I don't think he really wants to go to Pitt, and in the first place, and given some of the stuff he did, I don't think Pitt would take him anyway. So he's there, and hopefully it works out for him in the end. We have the Super Bowl coming up, and I'll be talking about that later this week. As you all know, there's a Democratic primary bracket out. The guy who did it is Win the Weekends. He's on Twitter. Go check him out. You know, he blogs and does. He tweets WWE. He tweets gambling. Does a whole kind of bunch of stuff. So check him out. He has a blog as well. He came up with a 16 nominee field for the bracket, which is pretty good actually. I'm going to break it down. I'm about to use a podcast to probably break down this bracket. But it's pretty good. And it even lays... What's great, even great about it is even it even lays out the whole Democratic primary itself. What it looks like right now. Who the players are. And who are pretty much going to be the ones who pretty much go out early. And it's a pretty... I think one guy already, you know... After 8 days after announcing his bid, is shutting it down. Hillary obviously is contemplating a run, which, you know, with Hillary, I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But basically, Bernie is not really, you know, Bernie supposes he's going to run again, and I really wish Bernie would just shut it down at this point, because, you know, he really didn't do the Dems any favors after he lost his bid. And pretty much, I mean, that primary split, you know, the base of the Dem voters in the two, where you had one half who, you know, stuck it out with Hillary, then the other half got mad and said, well, fuck this, I'm going to go vote Libertarian or go vote Trump or not vote at all. And a lot of them did vote Libertarian, and, you know, that's pretty much, I mean, one guy, for instance, is Clay Travis. I mean, y'all have listened to him. He's actually a liberal. Although his base is conservative. Basically guys are angry at ESPN for, you know, for whatever reasons, and so they switch to Clay. And Clay knows that, so he plays to them. But if you listen to Clay a lot, I haven't listened to him lately, but I did listen to him a good bit. Actually, the only time I ever listened to Clay is usually on Mondays. It was always after the football games, because he always had such good stuff with that. He would bring on some good people as well. But anytime LeBron does something, or any type of, you know, athlete like Michael Bennett, he'll pretty much spend a good week, or not so much a whole show, but a whole week on it. Just complaining about it. But, you know, Clay, you know, he worked on, I think he worked on Al Gore's campaign, I believe. It was Al Gore or John Kerry, one of the two. And he voted Democrat, except for this past election where he voted Libertarian. Because he didn't like Hillary. But, you know, that's just one instance of it. Maybe Clay was, obviously Clay must have been a Bernie bro. I mean, you know, wouldn't surprise me if he was. But I thought Clay was conservative, but if you listen to his show and listen to him talk, he's very liberal. I mean, it's kind of crazy. He just plays to his base, which he knows who his audience is, so he plays to them. But yeah, I'll break down the bracket. I mean, obviously Kamala Harris is your favorite right now to win it. And, you know, we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about the Super Bowl as well. I'm actually starting to like this matchup with the Rams and the Patriots. I thought, you know, initially I thought the Patriots were going to beat the crap out of the Rams. But, you know, I rewatched a lot of the Rams playoff games that they had this year. I rewatched the Saints game as well. I like the Rams' chances. It's just that, you know, when they start off in the beginning as the Saints, it seemed like they were, you know, in over their heads. And I think Sean McVay did a hell of a job of easing Goff in, you know, to that game. The only thing he had to, you know, to bet on was that his defense would hold up. And they did. They held the Saints to two field goals early. Because that game could have been a lot worse than it was. But I think what he had to do was he had to ease Goff into that game, because he knew it was a hostile environment. It was a really big game, and he wasn't sure how his quarterback was going to be. But he had to ease Goff into that situation. But he had to hope that his defense would hold up, and it did. It held up. Obviously, one thing that really helped was the fake punt, because the Saints weren't ever expecting it to happen. And the punter made a hell of a throw. And after that, the Saints were shook after that. Because the Giants, you know, because the Rams, by halftime, made it a game. And after that, they were confident. They were never out of that game. And no matter what the Saints threw at them, they were never out of it. But, you know, I saw a lot of things in the Rams' offense, because I'm not crazy about Goff as a QB right now. I think he'll be really good in due time. I think a lot of his numbers are based on the design of the plays and the scheme itself is why he does so good. But, if they can get a healthy Todd Gurley on top of C.J. Anderson, they're going to be really good in the running game. But I think there's a few other wrinkles they can throw at New England as well. So this is gonna be a chess match. And it's gonna be a fun one. So I mean, just sit back and relax and enjoy it. But I'll talk about that much more later this week, because I'm approaching almost 40 minutes on this podcast, and I'm just gonna start babbling and stomping, whatever nudge. Anyways, guys, have an awesome Monday. Hell of a pit.